The following is a Gurukul lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on November 29, 1989 in Sri Mayapur, India. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th chapter, verse 36.
Karoti bacha lang pangulangaya te giring at kipa tamang bande sri gurum dinatarinam padamanam dhamadhamam sri chaitanya ishwanam. The Bhagavad Gita as it is open to chapter 6, text 36. Asangyatatmana yogo dushprapa iti me mati basyatmana tu yatata Sakyo Vaptum Upayata Asangyata Unbridled Atmana by the mind Yoga Self-realization Dushprapa difficult to obtain Iti thus Me, my, mati, opinion, vasya, control, atmani, by the mind, tu, but, yatata, while endeavoring, sakya, practical, avaptum, to achieve, upayata, by appropriate means. Translation. By His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. For anyone whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. Translation with repetition. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. This is spoken by Lord Krishna, the supreme authority. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares that one who does not accept the proper treatment to detach the mind from material engagement can hardly achieve success in self-realization. Trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. Yoga practice without mental control is a waste of time. Such a show of yoga may be materially lucrative, but it is useless as far as spiritual realization is concerned. Therefore, one must control the mind by engaging it constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Unless one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he cannot steadily control the mind. A Krishna conscious person easily achieves the result of yoga practice without separate endeavor. But a yoga practitioner cannot achieve success without becoming Krishna conscious. Thus end Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's translation purport, text 36, chapter 6, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Dhyana Yoga chapter. Translation, for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion, said Lord Krishna. So Arjuna was expressing how difficult it was to control the mind. And then Krishna has replied that although it's difficult, it's possible by practice and engagement. Then he gives his opinion that there's really no alternative to controlling the mind. Because if someone's mind is uncontrolled, unbridled, bridled, do you know what a bridle is? I don't know if you know what bridle is. On a horse, the piece of steel is put in the mouth. There's called a bit between the teeth. And that between that bit, there's two ropes. Those ropes in the horse that are what the rider controls the horse with is called the bridle. So you drive the horse with a bridle. You can imagine, if you don't have a bridle, then the horse can go anywhere he wants. It's like a boat without a rudder, or a horse without a bridle. So the word unbridled mind means that there's no control of the mind. There's no means to control the mind. Controlling the mind, just like controlling a horse, is done with a bridle. Controlling a boat is done with a rudder. So how does one control the mind? That is done by the practice of Krishna consciousness. By using our mind for Krishna conscious works in Krishna's service, that controls the mind. If we don't use the mind in Krishna's service, the mind will think of so many other things to do, and then the mind becomes in control. But actually the mind is being controlled by Maya, by the modes of nature. Let's go do this nonsense, let's go do that nonsense. In this way the mind can think of so many nonsense things to do. So we control the mind by engaging the mind in Krishna consciousness. If we don't, then Krishna is saying that for the unbridled mind, self-realization is difficult work. Being Krishna conscious, becoming a real yogi, and realizing Krishna, the Self, is very difficult work if we don't control the mind. But Krishna says, he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. So when we are born, and we're a little child, little baby, then the mind is totally unbridled. And there's not much hope for bridling it, for controlling it. Because a little baby doesn't understand much. Few basic things are taught. Just like a dog, if a dog passes in the Western countries, the Westerners love to have pet dogs. So, but the dog is passing stool inside the house. So this makes, the dogs are dirty. In Vedic tradition, the dog should not come inside the house. Dog should stay outside. But in Western tradition, they say dog is man's best friend. And they bring the dog inside the house. So then, what they do when the dog passes stool in the house? They take the dog and stick the nose of the dog in the poop, in the stool. And they spank the dog. And then they make the dog go outside and pass. And eventually the dog knows I have to go outside and pass, otherwise I'm going to have my nose put in the stool and I'm going to get beat in the rear. So this much they can figure out after 2-3 times, then they go out, they start to bark and the master lets them go outside. So like this, little babies, the mother teaches, when you have to go to the bathroom, you tell me, otherwise I'm going to get you. And then gradually they say, Mommy, I have to go, you see. Then the mother takes them and they go to the bathroom like that. Very basic, you see, you cannot call that mental control. That is just like a basic, but the difference is animal can only go up to that basic. It cannot go beyond. But as the human being grows, the capacity to control the mind grows. When a child becomes 5 years old, they can enter into Gurukul. And in Gurukul, then they learn how to control the mind by applying the mind in studies, in organized classes, in organized recreation, and learning how to sing bhajans, how to learn mantras, and so many things. So gradually, more and more, they learn how to control the mind by engaging in different practical works and learning how to do devotional service. So that eventually, they can be fully in control of the mind, and then they can become perfect yogis. They can be perfect Krishna conscious persons. So, in material life, people think that freedom means to let the mind think whatever it wants. If it feels good, do it. This is one of the sayings in the West. If it feels good, do it. But in Bhagavad Gita, we know what may look good in the beginning is an immortal passion, and in the end it will produce suffering. So we don't do what looks good. We do what we know Krishna wants us to do, what the Guru wants us to do. Even something Krishna conscious may appear difficult in the beginning, but in the end it's nectar and sweet. This is the nature of mode of goodness. So by the process of devotional service, the Gurukul children, they learn how to control the mind, and thus for them achieving self-realization is assured as long as they strive by the appropriate means. Striving means trying continuously with determination and effort. To strive for something means that we try very hard to achieve that. All of the great acharyas, they had to face difficulties when trying to preach Krishna consciousness. How Srila Prabhupada, when he wanted to go to America, he had to face so many problems. First, just to get a passport was very difficult. Then when he got the passport, then to get the means of going to America, he couldn't get anyone to pay airplane ticket. So he had to go by ship. Hardly, you don't hear anybody going by ship, by cargo ship. It's very difficult, long journey. Now many of the foreign devotees, they will come from Europe or Australia or America here in Gurukul. They can fly from Europe in about 7-8 hours to India, from Australia maybe the same. America is about 17 hours. But Prabhupada was in the ship about 45 or 60 days, 1.5 to 2 months. I don't remember exactly, but said a few hours. He was there many, many weeks. And even in the ship he had to suffer a heart attack. So then he had to simply depend on Krishna. Because in the sea, what is, there's no expert hospital or anything. You have to just depend on Krishna. So the great acharya, they had to overcome a lot of difficulties. We find in the life of Ramanuja Acharya how he had to practically hide himself from certain aggressive kings who were against him. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was being persecuted by the Chankazi. Of course, later he revolted against that and established a right for the Sankirtan movement to be spread. But in this way, whenever we try to do something to spread Krishna consciousness, it's not unlikely that some type of demonic force may try to obstruct. But by Krishna's mercy, we can cross over all those difficulties. Just as Lord Chaitanya said to his followers, that nothing can stop my Sankirtan movement. You go on chanting Hare Krishna. Never mind for the Chankazi's threat. And I saw a beautiful drama here by the Gurukul of this pastime, where the Chankazi was frightened because of Narasimha Dev coming and giving him a heavy lesson. And I think I saw the Gurukul perform that drama, didn't I? It was quite nice. So, this way, it's ordinarily very difficult to control the mind. But it can be done if we just follow this authorized path of Krishna consciousness. Now, when someone's in the eternal pastimes with Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their mind's automatically controlled. For instance, the Mother Sachi, when she would see her son, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, she's feeling great love. Actually, this love is not material affection, but she was feeling love of Krishna because she was so fortunate to have Krishna Chaitanya as her son. So, for those eternal devotees who are within the Lord's pastime, they automatically are doing everything Krishna conscious. They don't have to follow what we are doing as sadhana bhakti, because already they're on the perfectional platform. But in order to get that type of blessing, to be able to serve Krishna, we need to develop our desire to be with Krishna, develop our desire to serve Krishna. That desire is within us. We have to uncover it. And that happens by the regulated practice of devotional service. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was so merciful as to come down and display his pastimes. But when he first came, that time he was not revealing to anyone that he was Krishna. In fact, the older people of Navadvip, the older Vaishnavas like Srivas Pandit and Mahari Gupta and others, they would admire Nimai Pandit, Lord Chaitanya was first known as Nimai Pandit, that he is such a great scholar, has so many wonderful qualities. If only he would become a pure Vaishnava. Of course, every day Lord Chaitanya would worship his Shaligram Shila in his house. He would do his offer all his food to Krishna. But he was, apart from that, he would go to the school and he would teach school. And he had many students. And he would be engaging in many arguments. So, Mukunda Gadadhar Prabhu actually, no, this is Mukunda. Mukunda Datta, he was also a student at that time. But the other students who weren't with Nimai Pandit, weren't with Chaitanya's classes, they would try to escape from being seen by Nimai Pandit. Because he was so great a debater that he would defeat anyone. So even the big older, the time he was only about 14 years old, 13 years old, but he was already a professor. When some 30, 40, 50 year old Brahmin Pandit would see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming as Nimai Pandit, they'd run and hide. Because he'd come and ask, "Oh, Pandit, I wanted to ask you a question." And when he would say that, they knew they were in trouble. He would ask such a question that whatever they said, that he would defeat them. Asking them a question was just a setup. He would ask a question, whatever answer they gave, that he would find the defect in their answer. So they became afraid, so they'd run and hide. Except the Vaishnavas, because they weren't into this false trying to put themselves as a big Pandit. They didn't have anything to fear from Nimai Pandit. So when he would meet Srivas Prabhu, Srivas would give him blessing that, why don't you give up all this argumentation and just take to the pure Krishna consciousness? And Nimai Pandit would touch his feet and say, "Bless me that I can find a bona fide guru, because I haven't found a guru yet, so therefore how can I take all this up seriously? In the future I'll take initiation and then that time I'll do it. Now I haven't found a guru." So he gave them some hope. He took some blessing, but then he went on with his own business. So one day he was walking with his student friends, and then out of one house came Mukunda Datta, just maybe like that, other side of the ashram. He looked, oh no, Nimai Pandit. He thought, where can I? He immediately turned the other way, started walking away fast. Nimai Pandit spotted him. "Ore, Mukunda Datta, kothai jaccho? Where are you going? Come here, we haven't seen you for so long." So then he got caught. He said, "Oh, Nimai Pandit, I didn't see you." "Fancy meeting you here." So then Nimai Pandit is saying, "Well, how come we're not seeing you? You're not coming anymore to class." He said, "No, now I'm studying poetry. You are teaching grammar, decorum. So now I'm going to the higher study of kavitva, Sanskrit poetry. So I don't need any more of this grammatical study." "Oh, really?" Nimai Pandit said. "Well, we also know something about poetry. But we'd like to learn something from you. You please compose some poetry for us so we can learn." Then Mukunda Datta said, "Oh no, now I'm really in the soup. Now I'm in big trouble." So, but was in a fired up mood, so he composed some poetry. Then Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, this is nice poetry. So could you tell me the good points and the defects in it?" So naturally nobody thinks there's defects. Even the Keshav Kashmiri got smashed by Lord Chaitanya, what to speak of Mukunda Datta. So then Nimai Pandit proceeded to tear apart his poetry and show the good and bad points, and then he also showed some poetic composition. So he said, "We know something about poetry, why do you want to study elsewhere?" So then Mukunda Datta, he surrendered, said, "All right, so I'll come back and study under you." Actually, these certain devotees, like Mukunda Datta, eternal devotees, When they would see me, my Pandit, they'd feel something. When their mind was feeling fearful, their heart was feeling attracted, because they were having a spontaneous attraction for Krishna. But because Nimai Pandit was playing like a aggressive kind of professor, mentally they would have other emotions. So it's very confusing for them. Of course, eventually when Nimai Pandit went to perform the Shraddha ceremony for his father at Goya, then he worshipped the lotus feet of Vishnu, and he at that time met again Ishwar Puri. And that time he got initiated by Ishwar Puri. And from that time on, he started to just totally manifest pure love of Krishna. Tears of love of prayer, Krishna, Krishna Prema, were coming from his eyes. He's constantly chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then he came back, and everyone could see the change in him, that now he was always talking about Krishna, chanting Krishna. So that time he had so many students. The students became worried. What happened to our Nimai Pandit? He used to be very scholastic, academic. Now it's so much bhakti. So they went to his teacher and Gangadas Pandit. And they complained that something happened to Nimai Pandit. He's giving up his brahminical tendency and becoming very devotional. He's not anymore challenging people. He's not arguing anymore. He's not getting into these big fights over the different Nyaya Shastra. So we think something's gone wrong with him. So Gangadas came to see Nimai Pandit and said, "What's happened? I heard that you're not following the brahminical trait anymore. You're not able to defeat someone in argument, in debate. Who said? Let anyone come. I challenge anyone, let them come. Let the first person come, I'll defeat that person. Whatever he says, I'll defeat it. Then again I'll prove whatever I defeated, that is also correct. Then again I'll defeat that." So then they thought, this is the Nimai Pandit we know. So then Lord Chaitanya went out to the street side waiting who's going to come. All the students are there. Who came but some brother of Srivas Thakur, some devotee was going by chanting. He was singing the song, some bhajan about Krishna and Krishna Leela, that how Putana the witch came to kill Krishna by putting poison on her breast, but Krishna was so merciful that he delivered Putana and made her his mother in the spiritual world. Like this, as soon as Lord Chaitanya heard the bhajan about Krishna, everyone could see his mind became fixed. And he just, as the bhajan is going on, he became more and more ecstatic, until finally he started to just cry out, "Krishna, Krishna!" And he just started, he fell to the ground and was weeping in ecstasy. He's turning around, rolling this side and that side. Oh no, the students thought, what has happened? So then, after Lord Chaitanya came out of the ecstasy, and all the students were really confused, what happened to our teacher? Instead of becoming a very, hard professor, very scholar, now he's become so devotional. Someone sings a bhajan and he goes rolling in the ground in ecstasy. So he called, he said, "You all come with me." They took him by the side of the Ganges, somewhere here. And then he just told them that, "I have to tell you something. That after going to Goya, I got initiated by Ishwar Puri, Sripad Ishwar Puri, and I realized that there's nothing but Krishna. Krishna is everything, and He's the Samam Bonam, He's the object of all transcendental knowledge. So now whatever I teach, I cannot teach something which is unrelated to Krishna. If, you want just that same kind of dry, materialistic, academic knowledge, I won't be able to give it anymore. Whatever knowledge I give will have to lead you to the absolute truth. So I'm very sorry. I really appreciate you. They're very good students. But I now realize purpose of life, and I cannot just go on teaching without bringing it to that ultimate purpose. So please don't mind. If you want to leave, you're free to go and take other teachers. This is the situation. They're your students. We've been teaching us the best education. Now you say you realize that the supreme truth, the absolute truth is Krishna. And you're going to be engaging in the Sankirtan movement. You're going to be teaching about the absolute truth and Krishna. Well, if you have the greatest thing, then we want to learn that from you. But you never taught us that before. So you shouldn't blame us, because you didn't teach us. Now if you're going to teach us, we're quite ready to learn. We don't want to go and find some other teacher. If you're the best teacher, and if you realize this is the highest truth, we want to learn that from you. But you have to teach us, because we don't know how to do this kirtan and everything. So then Lord Chaitanya brought some of the Vaishnavas there, and he taught them all how to do Harinam, and they all started to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So this is the way to control the mind, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So you're already fortunate to be in a Gurukul, Bhaktivedanta Academy, to learn to become yogis at the most opportune time when one is still young, to avoid engaging in all type of materialistic activity which distract the mind. I get letters from disciples who say that they went to material school and they engaged in so much sinful activity, and now that the activity is haunting them like a ghost, disturbing their mind and making it difficult for them to control the mind. So this is the good thing about Gurukul. We should avoid doing any kind of sinful activity, any non-authorized activity. Keep the mind clean from that. We can know theoretically about those things. Practically, better not to have to know. We can see others. There's plenty of examples you can see without doing anything. And this way then it's very easy to control the mind, to remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to chant Hare Krishna, to engage in service, and to learn all these things so that you can serve Krishna throughout your life in a very clear understanding. And with good tools, Hare Krishna. Any question?
I have a question.
Some devotees say that these children are wasting so much time in learning all these Vedic things, because our movement is Sankirtan movement. So we shouldn't be doing all these Vedic things. So can you please say something about that? Boys get confused whether they are doing right or not, just like the students of Chaitanya.
Of course, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that after three generations of even the devotees born in distant countries, that they would become born with Hare Sarvana, Hare Krishna. Bhagavan right in the ear. No need for that. But we can try to speed up the process. Obviously Prabhupada wanted that person should be endowed or be blessed with all good qualities and a mode of goodness. And in Vrindavan, he was very pleased when the Gurukul there, in fact he asked that time there was some Nepali Brahmin boys, and he engaged them in chanting the Brahma Sanghita and different mantras. Even when I was 69, Prabhupada wanted all the devotees to learn how to chant Ishupanishad. And he would have us chanting Ishupanishad in a way, you know, I can't say it's Vedic or, but you can say in a formal way. Ishavashyamidang sarvam jat kinja jagat jang jagat tena taktena. Everyone would be chanting. And Prabhupada wanted that the devotees should be able to chant these mantras, so this would be very good for preaching. Of course, later, that was put to music and it became westernized a little bit. Ishavashyamidang sarvam jat kinja jagat jang jagat tena taktena bunchitaha magidaha kisiswiddhana. Everything in the West becomes a little jazzed up. But that wasn't the way that Prabhupada taught, actually. He actually wanted that they should chant. He taught us to chant Isavasyam, and then he would chant very formally, and even the very difficult mantras. One of those mantras is, I think, 6, 7, 8, it's a very long one, very difficult meter. And especially in those days, hardly they could say Namo Vishnu Padaya. To say this mantra seemed very difficult. But Prabhupada was, I think after a while, initially he wanted the devotees to do a lot of things like this. Then he concentrated more on translation and that side. But initially he showed an interest. I think he found it took a lot of time to train the Westerners to say the Sanskrit. But he definitely wanted them to chant. That's why he introduced Brahma Samhita, Ishupanishad. So actually all our devotees, I noticed in the yagyas that a lot of time they chant Ishupanishad and Brahma Samhita, which were the two mantras especially introduced by Srila Prabhupada. So if someone says that these mantras are too Vedic, you know, I mean, doesn't really make, is Prabhupada too Vedic or what? I don't understand. Srila Prabhupada was the one who introduced. In fact, I remember that even in 1970-something, I think maybe a Kumbh Mela or in Calcutta, there was some big life member, and Prabhupada asked one Mataji disciple, you please speak some Sanskrit to the member. And she looked at Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, I don't speak Sanskrit. And then he said back to her, say the Guru Vastak, Samsara, you know. So then she says, Samsara dava nalalida loka tranaya karuna gana gana sam. Hare! Hare! She's speaking Sanskrit! The member was, oh! Mataji! Even the Western Vaishnavis, they're speaking Sanskrit! Then, Hare, you have done a miracle, then like this, he said. So, Srila Prabhupada knew that for preaching, this actually has a very big impact, especially in India. And I remember that one time, many times, Prabhupada said, actually, if my devotees could quote the Sanskrit verses like I do in their preaching, then their preaching would be, you know, very good, perfect. Whatever. How Srila Prabhupada would quote, he'd lecture, quote, take apart the verse, word by word, explain it, go on. This is very authoritative, very impressive. And unfortunately, most of Western disciples couldn't actually grasp that amount of Sanskrit to preach in that way. Although, because of Prabhupada's enthusing and pushing everyone, everyone does quote slokas. But probably no one would say that so fluently and lucidly and as frequently as Srila Prabhupada. But he wanted that. So you can't quote Sanskrit slokas and explain the words if you don't know Sanskrit a little bit. You see, it's difficult to chant. If you're going to chant Ishupanishad and Brahma Sanghita properly, you have to know how to chant, in general, how to chant slokas the Vedic way. The principle is the same if you chant Ishupanishad or if you chant Samaved or whatever you chant. Maybe the difference are there between Vedas. I'm not an expert in the chanting because didn't have opportunity of going through the Gurukul education in Mayapur. But we know that the basic principles are there. So if we're going to learn how to chant properly, if you need to know those principles, then you can chant any mantra properly, whatever the different principles are. They may vary between different Vedic literature, but in general there are certain basic principles. So in a broader vision, certainly Srila Prabhupada wanted preachers who would have a really good access to his books and to the slokas and be able to explain very authoritatively from the Vedic pramanas, evidences, you see. Because, especially as Krishna consciousness expands, we're going to have to face various types of challenges from, right now people are maybe not challenging so much, but at some point, I mean on a philosophical basis, if we are going to win over the different, you see, it's predicted in the Padma Puran, that all the four Vaishnava Sampradaya will become one. And it also predicted in other places how the Brahma Sampradaya will be the predominant. So that means that we have to be able to explain the philosophy in such a way that people will be convinced, even who are knowledgeable in philosophy. Maybe most of the people you meet on the street, they just ask, what is that white paint on your nose? A few simple questions. They don't know much. Why do you wear sikka? What is the ponytail on your head? You know, in the West, these are the two main questions. Why you wear a bed sheet? These are the top three philosophical questions. And then, they're not, you know, very few people ask something, you know, otherwise they ask something about what is the Kundalini Shakti. You'd be surprised, many people ask this question. So, to be well-rounded, to be able to discuss philosophy, in the West they don't have so much experience, because few people know philosophy in the West. But here in India, many people know the philosophy still. Maybe the general people also gradually becoming more westernized, they're becoming out of touch. Basic preaching is sufficient. But in the long run, we have to be able to win over also the philosophers and convince them of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy's completeness and perfectness. So to do that, you have to have a broad grasp of Srila Prabhupada's books and be able to explain also in an authoritative way, referring to all the Vedas, Upanishads, Suti, Smriti, Pranadi, Panchratik, Vidhi, Bina, Aikantik, Hariya Bhakti, Utpataya, Vakalpati. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that there be some devotees who are trained in that way to be preachers, to be brahminically qualified preachers. And these are tools. These are tools that we can use in preaching. Also, I remember how in that verse in the Bhagavatam, when that, Kadvanga Maharaj was told he had one moment to live. Then he gave a short two, three sloka speech, and then he immediately came to his temple and surrendered to the deity. But he just told the Devas, actually the dearest thing to me is the Vaishnavas, the Brahmanas, the Vedic culture. You see, Srila Prabhupada said that we should preach even in Western countries by culture. Said, by culture you can conquer. So, Srila Prabhupada didn't mean Western culture. They already have whatever you call that, if you want to call that culture. Srila Prabhupada meant that by Vedic culture, through festivals, through ceremonies, through the Vedic culture, art, music, science, that would be the thing which would capture the imagination and the mind of the Western people. They have technology, they have machinery. What they lack is spiritual culture. So, even I found one time I was with one of the Gurukul boys from here. We were going and we were in Murshidabad in Barampur. It just so happened that that time the Abdus Sattar, who at that time was the head of the Congress I parliamentary party of West Bengal, State Assembly opposition leader. It was about 4 or 5 years ago. And he was at the house, we were doing a program, he stopped by. We were talking, he's a Muslim by, you know, his religion, but he's a very open person. And that time we were talking, this is a Gurukul student, and I just mentioned, you know, what to talk about. He's a Muslim, so I can't just talk directly about Krishna. First though, I've said that we teach them everything. What do you teach in the Gurukul? So I explained, we teach Vedic science. He said, we also teach mathematics. So then he gave a demonstration. The boy, how you can multiply these huge numbers using Vedic math. So he took about 18-digit two numbers and multiplied it and then gave the answer. So then Abdu Sattar was very much impressed. He said, but he gave it to his PA. So you check it. So the PA, he took about 20 minutes sitting there figuring out, adding it up, huge big piece of paper, you know. Then finally came, you know, and he said, yeah, it's the correct answer. So then he said, you look at what you've done. You did it in 1 minute, you're doing it 20 minutes. So he said, very interesting. But at that time he gave some other number to add. But the student didn't know how to add that number. He just said, well, I didn't know that mantra yet. I don't know what was the difficulty that, huh?
Step by step.
So, just even by mathematics, or these things are very interesting. Then that just gives opens the door. Then after that, you can preach so many things. Once their faith is established, that, well, these people know something I don't know, then they want to know more. So, I found like in South America, the people, they love this fire yajnas. They love the ceremonies. They love the Vedic weddings. Even in America, North America, everywhere I find that people like to see the Vedic weddings. They like to see the different ceremonies perform, the festivals. So these are all Vedic. These are all part of Vedic culture. So it's good if someone knows how to do those. And if, as we read in the Gita sloka, we need to occupy ourselves with Krishna consciousness. We are learning things which we can use in Krishna's service, which are connected to Krishna. Otherwise, if we don't learn this, then our mind will want to be occupied in something. So then we'll get into some frivolous sport or some other nonsense, which will just waste our time. Better to, as Katvanga Maharaj said, he loved the Vedic culture. Prabhupada said, by Vedic culture we can spread the Krishna consciousness all over the world. By culture you will conquer. So why should someone complain about learning the culture that will conquer the world? We're not teaching anybody. I don't think anyone is being taught how to do, you know, demigod worship or other things like that. We're just teaching the essential things which are directly useful for Krishna's service. Any other question? Time is up. Om Tat Sat.
Jai Shiva Chaitanya Ki.
Jai.